Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Trace Kerr.
And I'm Amy Barton. And this is our 200th episode. Everything you never knew you wanted to know about 1822. It might not actually be everything. I'm just going to have to tell you. I don't think we can cover everything in like a 20-30 minute episode, but it's going to be a lot of the good stuff.
Oh yeah, all the you know, it's like we got to skim off the top of the fun, interesting, wacky facts and
gross. There's going to be gross, guys.
Oh, of course. And and one of the this is my favorite kind of episode because neither of us know what the other person is going to talk about. Mm-mm. And since it's 1822, I know Amy's not bringing up Chuck Norris, so I'll be safe.
Did you know, Trace, the Great Wall of China was originally created to keep Chuck Norris out? It didn't. It's funny that you say that because that is the very first thing in my show notes.
Oh my God.
But I do have three real other topics for you all today, because I know some of you love Chuck Norris jokes like I do. Others are like, oh my gosh, really? Is that again? Yes, always.
Always.
So what's new in the land of Trace and the Curse?
I had an issue of Anderson Luck. Okay, so Anderson Luck.
Well, that's bad and good. I've heard of this.
Yes, exactly. It's like, it's not great, but it's the best it could have gone. So I needed to do my yearly shred and file.
Yes, I'm due for that.
Well, yeah, I was major league due. And so yesterday I was like, oh, I need to do it. But then, you know, I found other things to do. I was cleaning closets. And then it's three file boxes in this cupboard under stairs, like in our basement. Okay.
Is that 1 year or is this your box of shame?
Well, no, it's boxes of like stuff I need to keep track of. And then also the yearly bills.
It's your file cabinet.
It is my file cabinet.
And
I've been meaning to transfer it out of cardboard into something else. Well, anyway, so I go down there. Yeah. There's other stuff in that cupboard and I pick something up to move out of the way. And the cupboard is lined with carpet. And when I pick up the thing that was there, there's water on the carpet.
Oh, no. Which means there's water in the walls.
The boxes were wet. The documents were not.
Hallelujah.
And it's the shower. There's a shower like right next to it. And I think it's leaking like from the drain, hits the floor, goes across the concrete. Oh, it's sucky that it was leaking, right?
Yeah.
But all of like the house documents...
Oh, yeah. Like your titles and things.
All those things. The car stuff, you know, the things that we've been keeping from employment. You know, the stuff that you can't get rid of, but you have to keep somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So now it has all been refiled, reorganized. The dopamine was enormous. I shredded. I always feel like a spy when I shred.
Oh, yeah.
It's
great.
Yeah. I'm like, we've got to shred this before the coppers get here.
That's right. If you do it fast, or with great resignation, like you've just built a company out of millions and it's Saturday and you're hiding from the feds. You can eat chocolate and lots of junk food when you do that.
Oh, I hadn't thought of doing it that way. Like you're bilking the IRS. You're like, all the evidence is gone. Oh, next time.
Yeah. Yep. I have a file cabinet. It's a counter. It's a two drawer longer one. And I have it because our friends Dave and Amanda from Mountain Lakes, Amanda's daughter Claire is, I think she's a sophomore or a junior. She's 16. A year or so ago, she was coming home on her skateboard and passed a file cabinet sitting on the side of the road. And I'm not quite sure how far away it was, but it was a fair distance from home. She put the cabinet on her skateboard and it's wide. It's like arm's length wide. Like put your arms out. She put it on her skateboard and rode it home. And they're like, thank you. Now what do we do with it? And so they didn't want it, but she had hauled it home and they felt like they had to do something. And so it's mine now and I love it. I can fit two full years in the top drawer and the bottom drawer has overflow that I'm not quite ready to let go or will never let go. Like, I think I have almost all our tax returns from ever.
Oh, you don't need that.
I know, but one of these days, maybe this is the year that I'll take in the old ones from the 90s and shred them.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I did. I came across, I had some old stuff that I did shred this time that was like Chaz's tax return from 1990. We don't need this anymore.
This is officially an antique.
I know. It's, and I got to tell you, the paper was yellowy and the font, goodness. it looked old.
Word processor.
And I did not like that.
No, that is a little strange.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah, so everything was saved. Whew.
Yeah, that's, so now you've got to either stop using that and turn the water off to it or track down the problem, or maybe both.
Yeah, it's only when it's on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
So we just can't use it. Yeah, it was funny because I called the repair place. Okay, I've got this leaking shower. And she was like, is it leaking right now? Okay, I said, no, it's only when we use it. Oh, okay, because we don't have anything until March.
Oh, gosh. So you better get on the books.
Yeah. I said, I am home. So if you have a cancellation, we probably won't. Oh, okay. I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
Anyway, we've diverged off the main path here.
We have.
We have had 200 episodes. This is number 200.
It's remarkable. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it's happened.
I don't know either.
Kind of snuck up on us. I'm loving it still. I look forward to recording with you all the time.
Me too.
So let's see. Do we want to start off with rock, paper, scissors? Who's going first? You, me?
I have a few things about cost of living.
All right, let's do that. That sounds depressing.
Like, it's interesting. It's very interesting because certain things inflate at a gradual rate and sort of have this standard uphill trajectory, and others like skyrocket and are ridiculous. So for instance, bacon was 11 cents per pound in 1822.
Wow.
Beef and chicken were about 5 to 6 cents a pound. A whole hog in 1822 was about 6.5 cents a pound. So if you were to buy, I looked up like, what is a whole hog? And someone said 210 pounds. I'm like, okay, let's roll with 210 pounds of hog in 1822 would have cost $13.65.
Wow.
To buy the same thing in 2021 would cost you $682.50.
Wow.
With just, and this is just, some of you are going to find other stats. This was just one website with one price. I'm like, that is in the range. So that is a 5,000% increase over 200 years.
Okay, though, but what was 15? Was it $15?
Yeah, $13.65 in 1822.
Okay. That seems like a lot of money, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like, I don't see a lot of lay people going out and buying a whole hog.
No. Uh-uh.
But honestly, I also am not going out and buying a whole hog for $682
what?
Now. I know. So. Butter was 16 to 25 cents per pound. And now at my local grocery store, it's been $2.99 on sale over the holidays quite a bit. And that is a 1,200% increase. So a hog has increased by 5,000%, but 1,200% for the butter. So that has increased more slowly. You can buy a wooden-handled shovel at Lowe's now for $26.88, 55-inch wooden-handled shovel. Mm. In 1821, I couldn't find the 22 stats, but it's close enough, 25 cents. So that's a 10,000% increase. I could go on with these numbers for a long time because I've also got income information. Like if you were a woman working in Philadelphia in a shirt factory, you'd probably make about 2 shirts a day and you would get paid 12.5 cents for each shirt that you made. So if you work 250 days in a year, which you probably worked more, let's be honest, your annual income would be about $62.50.
Yeah, but if $62.50, then you got that 5 cents a pound for things. So
yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was curious about. So $200, $200.24 in 1822 is about the equivalent of $4,756.95 today.
Wow.
Ooh, do you want to know how much of the population do you think lived in rural areas in 1822? Or 1820, excuse me.
The United States?
Yep, U.S.
In rural areas? Okay, I'm going to say 65%.
So rural, in 1820 census, we had 7% of people were living in urban areas. So cities accounted for only 7%.
Oh, 93%
of the people lived in the country or in some sort of rural area. Now, urbanized areas in the U.S. in 2020 or 2021 account for 80.7%. And so 19.3% of our population live in rural areas.
Wow.
It's flip-flopped completely almost.
Huh. And four of them are in Wyoming.
But they're going to get their own show soon, and it's going to be amazing. Wait, is Yellowstone in Wyoming? Is that where Yellowstone is?
Yeah,
it's a big show, right?
It's like on the edge. Yeah.
So that was a smattering. These, like, you'll fall down the rabbit hole of, oh, this is how much linen cost. And just, it's interesting to see from this list what products people bought and what was readily available. And it was a lot of fun to just toot through all those statistics. And
those numbers are pretty cool. And I have a perfect segue.
Oh, good.
Talking about a cookbook published in 1822.
Excellent.
So the Cook and Housekeeper's Complete and Universal Dictionary, including a system of modern cookery adapted for the use of private families, was written by Ms. Mary Eaton. And this book, I'm going to put in the show notes because you can look at the whole book. It's been scanned.
Oh, nice.
It has everything. It's how to run a household, how to cook things. It covers I could imagine it's like 500 pages, an upper class family, you know, the girl is getting married and someone is like, here, you're going to need this.
Yes.
But what was super fun is they had all these recipes in there. Bubble and Squeak.
Oh, yes. I've heard of that.
So Bubble and Squeak is boil, chop, and fried cabbage with butter, pepper, and salt. And then I like it says lay it on slices of underdone beef, lightly fried. I don't want underdone beef.
I don't. My husband and family would. They enjoy. They would not characterize it in that way. They would say medium rare. But
well, see, I don't mind medium rare, but there's something about 1822 and underdone beef that just seems like a recipe for a lot of trips to the outhouse. And they had things like, this just cracks me up, leek milk. Yeah, gallon of milk, handful of leeks, drink it twice a day. Good for jaundice. Ooh. You know what? I'd rather not.
Yeah, can I do something else for jaundice? Can I just live yellow?
Yeah, just let me turn yellow. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, can you have leeks in the soup instead?
Yeah, exactly. Instead of just in milk. And then okay, so in addition to cooking stuff, she did have medical stuff, and I'll do this last one, for weak eyes.
Fine. Yeah.
So dimness of sight arising from weakness or inflammation. You know, you said you just got new glasses. Maybe you need some of this. So it's best relieved by frequent washing of eyes with cold water. But if that doesn't work, if you need to take it to the next level, dissolve 4 grains of sugar of lead.
Sugar of lead?
Yep. With sal ammoniac, which is a ammonia salt, which they're like, keep that away from your eyes. So you got lead and you got an ammonia salt. Dissolve it in water with some laudanum.
Of course.
And then bathe your eyes with that in the night and in the morning.
And this is supposed to help them?
Yes, it's supposed to help. And if you don't have all of those things, you can just spoon brandy water into your eyeballs. Alcohol in your eyeballs.
Oh, boy. I don't feel like that. I think that's, nope, counterindicated now.
Yeah, no, just keep that stuff away from my eyeballs.
I'm suddenly much more on board. I do love a historical cookbook because there's so much of their era.
Yes. I also enjoy how there's no real measuring.
No, it's like a teacup and they really mean a teacup.
Yeah. Or they'll just say, add good broth and some bits of butter. Figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a neighbor that's going to know how many bits are.
Yeah. If I have to tell you, clearly your mother didn't do the job she was supposed to do if someone needs to tell you, right?
Yeah. Standardization had not yet occurred.
Nope, not at all. Ms. Mary Eaton and her cookery for private families. Not public families, only private
families. I like that differentiation.
Yes.
As long as we're on the medical front, would you like to talk about pioneering gastric endoscopy Dr. William Beaumont?
That sounds dangerous for 1822.
It totally does. And who doesn't want to talk about endoscopy of any kind? Historical, modern, upper GI, lower.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it. Unless you had more cookbook fun, because we can go back there. This is
I have done all the cookbook. Now we've put food into the body, and now we're going to look in the body.
That's exactly it. So this did ring a bell for me, but I can't remember if it's high school or college. I think it's college, because this gets into some things that one might discuss in the psychology field. So it's June 6th, 1822. And you're hanging out by the trading post on Mackinac Island, and you're accidentally shot with a musket at close range.
Oops.
Normally, a hole in your gut will be the end of you.
Yeah.
But not Alexis St. Martin. He was 20, and he survived, pulled through. William Beaumont was an army surgeon, and he was nearby at the time, stationed at the post. And so he came, and he treated Beaumont, and didn't expect him to recover, even though he's 20, you know, gangrene. And there's just so many factors that they couldn't control in 1820.
Yeah.
But he did. So good news. He survived.
Yay.
Bad news. Big hole in his stomach. And when we say heal, with his case, the stomach lining and the skin fused together around that circle, and those edges healed. But they did not come back together.
He had a fistula.
How do you know that? It's like you're a wizard of medicine. I did not know that concept. Maybe it's on medical dramas. Do you people watching Grey's Anatomy know what fistulas are?
They probably do. Vet clinic work. I'm also, like knowledge super freak.
Yes. Okay. I feel a little less bad because I do the same thing, but we don't always go down the same road.
No, we don't.
So I did go down this road to try to understand, and it's that stomach lining and the outer skin fused together, but that hole never pulled together. It must have been big enough that they couldn't. Well, they didn't have modern adhesives. 1822, not a lot of Band-Aids. And so in a location like that, I think maybe they just could not pull that hole close enough together and didn't think he'd survive, because he would eat and food would not stay in his body because he no longer had a closed system.
Oh, my God.
So that actually got the creative juices of Beaumont flowing and caused him to some questions. And so the good news is that this led to some amazing discoveries, really revolutionary concepts in the way our gastric system works. The bad news is that Beaumont was a bit of an opportunist. St. Martin was illiterate and was just a laborer kind of guy. Uh-huh. And so as St. Martin is grateful that he has survived and is recovering under the gentle care of Beaumont in his home, Beaumont gives him a contract to sign, which he doesn't really explain well to him. Alexis St. Martin signed it. And what he signed was that he would live in Beaumont's home and work for him and receive board, room and board and work. And Beaumont would do experiments on him and learn more about this fistula and how his digestive system worked. So this is the shady side of history, and medical history in particular has some not so great moments. So I just want to tell you all that it's wonderful that we do have these revelations, but they were not gathered in the most ethical way. But I am going to skip to the end of the story to tell you that after some shenanigans and experiments, 200 experiments over 10 years, St. Martin left for a trip and just decided he was never coming back. So by 30, Alexis St. Martin was free to live his own life. But in the interim, this fistula was open. And so Beaumont could literally dangle a string with meat on it in there and observe what digestion did to it. So they learned that, is it hydrochloric acid is in your stomach? Let's see. I do have show notes, guys. Let me go there.
You know, we talk a lot about scientists doing things where we're like chopping off the legs of ants or, you know, doing all these horrible things. And, you know, I'm glad there was an opportunity for you to learn, but maybe don't treat a person like a human guinea pig.
Yes.
Because he did terrible things to him, putting things in his body.
Yes. Like he placed a whole sack of food in his stomach and was like, let's see what this does.
How long does that take to digest?
Yeah. And it takes a long time and is very painful. Can you imagine the doctor doing something to you that causes dimness of vision and not suing them?
Is this where the phrase, if it's bothersome, started? Yes. Doctor, my vision is dimming. I feel as though I'm in a room with a low candle. Do you find it bothersome? No, then it's fine.
What do you indicate treatment might be? Let's talk about that first. So
Is it hydrochloric acid? What kind of acid is it?
I got sidetracked.
I'm sorry. That was my fault.
It is hydrochloric acid.
Oh, it is.
I couldn't remember. I put that in the notes, but it's down in the what did we learn section, which I've almost arrived at. But so St. Martin's fate. He died in 1880 with his family, and they delayed burial so that his body would not be fit for future experimentation. So they were forward-thinking people that did not want that to be a part of his death as well. And yeah. So he has lived a peaceful life. And so he had from like 1832 to 1880, which was much less eventful, hopefully. And Beaumont, in the meantime, published an account of experiments in 1838 called Experiments and Observations of the Gastric Juice and the Physiology of Digestion. He drew over 51 conclusions about digestion based on his observations of St. Martin. Such as vegetables were digested more slowly than meat. Oh. These are things we know now, but we don't think too much about. Milk coagulated early in the digestive process. Digestion is aided by a churning motion within the stomach, which we kind of feel, sort of.
Right. But seeing it firsthand, although, like yeah. I said, you know, this man, just thinking of living your life with this hole, I mean.
Yes. It would be
was he
weird.
Having to pinch it closed? I mean, he didn't have a colostomy bag. I mean, what were they even doing? There's so many questions I have that we just can't
answer.
And
what was his quality of life by 1880? What was science like by then? Could they at least, I suppose I would rig up some sort of little leather cover. I don't know.
Oh, like an eye patch for your tummy?
Yeah, and you just don't bend over for stuff. He bends from his knees for everything. I feel like that could complicate some life. Things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like personal relationships and some interactions there. And
well, he had kids. Clearly, life finds a way.
Yeah. Yep. So that's Alexis St. Martin.
Yeah. Putting things in on a string. I just, dude.
Yeah. Once you knew it was distressing, initially, like if that wasn't harming him and he was like, oh, yeah, that's interesting, go for it. But once he expressed distress and his vision dimmed,
yeah.
Time to put the brakes on.
No, now we lean in.
Thank you to all the medical professionals who have not experimented on me in life.
Exactly. Well, I also have a cool science innovation, but it's with animals.
Oh, good. All right.
So 1822, birds leave for the winter. Where do they go?
Yeah, now we know exactly where they go because we have them GPSed and we know what they ate and when they did it.
Right. Well, back then, we didn't really know. We just knew that they left. People mm-hmm. in the 19th century, some people thought birds hibernated in the bottoms of ponds or streams like frogs.
Oh, really?
People are like, where did they go? 1703. Now, this is back a ways, but I had to tell you this. In 1703, a Harvard professor proposed that birds were flying to the moon.
I love that idea.
For the winter. Yeah, they're just like, yeah, well, peace out. We'll be back. But, okay, so the mystery, in 1822, a white stork showed up in Klutz, K-L-U-T-Z. Klutz? Klutz?
Klutz? Where is Klutz at, Klutz? That depends.
It's in Germany.
I'm going to say Klutz.
Klutz. Okay, so it showed up in Klutz, Germany. Yeah, big. It's a big white stork. And a fellow was hunting, and he shot the stork. And when he got closer, he saw that there was a 30-inch spear sticking through the breast and the neck of the stork.
Oh my, 30 inches? That is a significant size thing.
This bird has been taxidermied. I'll put a picture. How is it still alive? Because this bird came from Africa.
What? And it made it to Germany?
Yeah. So these storks go from Morocco and northern Africa and they fly up into Germany is one of its most northern locations. But, you know, Spain and France and Germany, these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So the Germans were like, you know, it was quite a sensation because, you know, here's a stork and it's got a spear in it. So they named this new animal a Pfeilstorch. Which was an arrow stork.
Nice.
When they figured out that the spear was of African make, they were like, oh my gosh, they don't go to the moon. They're not in the bottoms of ponds. They're flying down to Africa.
It's a whole revelation. It's so interesting what we take for granted knowledge-wise that they had to figure out.
Yeah. Well, this was the first evidence, but here's the thing that's really crazy. There have been 24 recorded Pfeilstorch storks since 1822.
Really? Mm-hmm. So they have been hit by a spear and then they have And then they've lived to migrate somewhere.
Yes.
All the way to Germany or to other northern places?
No, it's Germany that they keep showing up with these arrows in them.
Wow. That is very weird, but awesome. Maybe they just know that the Germans have a similar sensibility. Like, they're very sensible. I'm going to go there.
They're like, I'll go there. Maybe they can help.
It took them a while, but they figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So evidence for migration with a stork with an arrow through it.
That's quite amazing. That would be a weird sight to, because we get imports all the time. But to see something from Africa and Germany in 1822 would be quite noteworthy.
Well, I was trying to think of if we had a bird show up here with, like, I don't know, some sort of tropical rainforest spear in it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be remarkable.
It would be, but I would not assume that either. I would be like, some jerk has playing with his novelty store arrow collection.
Oh, there you go.
In these modern times, if there was a way to, like, maybe the magic is gone for me now, because I would always be skeptical. It's terrible.
Oh, is this the year? So 2022, sad. The year Amy became jaded.
No, I think I've been jaded for a long time. But I am willing to believe other completely ridiculous things. So I have that magic. So don't despair for me, everyone.
Okay, that's good. All right, so we've got cooking and gastric juices and storks. And naturally, we have to go in some completely different direction.
How about technology? I love technology of the time.
All right.
That's how I'm articulately going to begin. I should have looked other advances up for the year to give us context. But medically, we've had good context for where we were at as a society. So July 3rd is our date. Charles Babbage published a proposal for a difference engine, which is a mechanical forerunner of the modern computer.
Ooh.
And it's pretty foundational in its, this is how we do computers now. Mm-hmm. There's a very direct lineage because it could calculate logarithms and trigonometric functions.
Trigonometric? Wow.
So Charles Babbage lived from 1791 to 1871. He was fairly long lived, and he was an English polymath, which is the math version of a polyglot. If you can speak lots of languages, he did lots of maths.
Ew.
He was a mathematician. Ew.
Ew.
I know. I'm like, I'm completely uninterested in that part.
I'm so happy for him. No.
Yeah. I'm glad someone is doing it, but
not me.
Yeah. So he was a philosopher in addition to his mathematics.
Oh.
He was a philosopher and an inventor and a mechanical engineer. So those things, that mechanical engineer particularly, he was able to do the math, but then figure out a way for it to quantify and compute on its own in this engine. And I will, in 2023, when I do show notes, I'll put that up too, because it's an interesting looking thing.
Does it has lots of like gears and because we this is one that we both kind of looked at and you were like, I'm going to do the difference engine. And I went,
it's faster. And he made multiple versions of this, but basically think big mechanical calculator, levers and gears and things. It could tabulate polynomial functions.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means.
I don't either, but somebody out there does.
It sounds fancy.
Yeah. And this was something that the government at the time was looking into, and they're like, this is super cool. And they pursued and pursued, but eventually just the logistics of launching this became punitively expensive and slow, which is definitely, I think many, many inventions are bogged down this way, but then they turn a corner and figure out a shorter way to get it done in a more efficient way. So although we, you know, it did not launch into a great government contract, it still is that foundation. During the 1980s, Alan G. Bromley, who was an associate professor at the University of Sydney, Australia, studied his original Babbage's drawings for the difference in analytical engines. He made multiple kinds of engines because these live in the Science Museum Library in London. So you could do this too with the right funding. But he led the construction of a working difference engine version 2 from 1985 to 1991 under Doran Swade, who was the curator of computing. So that was the 200th anniversary of Babbage's birth. But it worked. The completed engine and its printer worked flawlessly, and they apparently still do.
Wow. I mean, part of the problem would be that instead of having all these little microchips, you'd have to have every single number in there on a gear, and somebody would have to be cranking it.
Delicately.
To come up with those. Wow. Wow. It, you know, it's so funny to think that there are things, like you said, that, I mean, this was a computer, but we didn't have the, it's like this person could have the idea. It's like Da Vinci coming up with a helicopter, right?
That's exactly what I kept thinking about. Yeah.
That you have an idea, but you don't have the tech to do the idea.
Yeah. You're trapped in your mind. And somebody two steps down the road, technology-wise, can actually execute it because somebody else has developed a widget to do it.
Or the steel, or the whatever, or the electricity, all those things. Huh.
Yeah. So keep inventing, everyone. Do your ideas, because you might have a lot of ideas that don't work, but a generation down the road, maybe they will. Somebody else will carry the ball further down the field.
Absolutely.
We hope we've left you better informed about life 200 years ago. Things are better now.
Well, are they?
There's some trade-offs, but I would defend Swatch watches and Lycra fabrics are modern magic.
That's true. As I sit here in my yoga pants.
Amen. I was just thinking, I'm in my bedroom and I'm right next to the dresser. There's stretchy pants in there.
Between recording episodes, we'll have a stretchy pants break.
Yeah. So if you're lonely for other Brain Junk episodes, I mean, we're back and we're producing, but we have a whole back catalog of 199 other episodes at brainjunkpodcast.com or something like that. You guys have Google, right? This modern era, you can search us. We are everywhere you get podcasts, and we are on, we're delightful on social media occasionally.
What are you banging on?
Nothing. I was touching the computer stand.
Tappy tappy.
I was not a fun, I was very fun to sit next to in class, but not while you were testing. I've sat still for a long time. How long has this recording been happening? So long.
I know. This is an hour. Oh my God. We need to go.
We have like 20 minutes on the front end of that though.
Oh, that's true. But okay, so social media, Instagram, Facebook. If you have thoughts or ideas, Facebook is a good place to leave messages. I asked people for some episode ideas, and I actually have some of those kind of in the works. Thank you, people.
We will listen to you.
Yeah, we do. We listen to the public.
Unlike your children, they don't listen. But we do.
That's true. Amy and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. And I guarantee you will never be bored.